WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there's no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 2nd of October, 2018. Let me move this mic closer. This morning, I'm going to have an episode of Gunsmoke throughout the middle portion of the program, bookended by yours truly, Johnny Dollar. I'm going to start a new quote-unquote matter. This is the McCormick matter, which was the first of the quarter hour dailies that started there in 1955. I think for 2 years they did quarter hour dailies. I think it's strictly 2 years. Before that they had half hour weeklies. But we'll go ahead and start this one. This is the McCormick matter. Had an original air date of the 3rd of October, 1955. Purely coincidental that I'm doing this. Today's the 2nd. It's purely coincidental. I figured I wanted to check out what the 1st was, what the 1st sounded like when they went to the quarter hour dailies. I'm going to hush up now and get to the drama. This is Arthur. Thanks for listening.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as...
Johnny Dollar.
Mr. Dollar, this is Father Taggart. I'm calling you from Ossining. I'm one of the chaplains here at Sing Sing.
Oh, yes, sir. What can I do for you, Father?
Well, nothing for me, Mr. Dollar, but possibly for someone else. Michael Cairn, one of our inmates, asked me to contact you.
Michael Cairn?
Mm-hmm. You remember him? He wasn't sure you would.
Old-time grifter and con man who got tied up with an insurance fraud a few years ago, blonde fella?
Yes. Well, Michael wants to see you, Mr. Dollar. Could you possibly find the time to come up here?
Well, I don't know, Father. Is this something important?
It is to Michael.
Oh, well, look, I'll be in New York sometime next month. Maybe I'll get a chance to stop off.
Well, couldn't you possibly make it sooner?
What's the rush? He's going to be there quite a while, isn't he?
Not very long, I'm afraid. Michael is dying.
All right, Father, you can expect me.
Welcome to Johnny Dollar. Beginning tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Allied Casualty and Insurance Company Limited, Markham Building, Hartford, Connecticut. Attention, Ed Barth, Controller's Office. This is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the McCormick matter. Though you didn't authorize the investigation, Ed, I'm sure that once the facts are out, you will honor the following. Expense account, item 1, $7.95. Train fare and incidentals, Hartford to Ossining, New York. I was admitted inside the prison and greeted by Father Taggart. He's a tall, mild-looking man, a Jesuit, I believe. He had a pass all ready for me, and he led me straight to the prison infirmary.
Just in here. Michael will certainly appreciate your coming, Mr. Dollar.
I hope it satisfies whatever's on his mind. I can't imagine what it would be. You know, it was my investigation and testimony that put him in here, Father.
He told me all about that, and I'm sure it has nothing to do with why he wants to see you. See, his lungs started to go about 2 years ago, and there's just been no way to arrest the condition.
Does he know how close he is?
Oh, yes. And he's not afraid to die. Here we are, Mr. Dollar.
Oh.
What?
Hardly the same man I remember, Father.
He's had it bad lately. Lost a great deal of weight.
Yeah. Asleep?
Yes. Michael. Michael.
Oh. Hey, Father.
I brought someone to see you.
What'd he say?
Hiya, Mike.
Oh, thanks for coming. Thanks, Johnny.
Thank Father Taggart here.
He's an all right guy, Johnny. He's just like you. I always said you were the best insurance cop.
Here, what's all this?
I'm kicking out, Johnny. Didn't you tell him, Father?
He told me, Mike.
Guess I didn't live right.
I'll be back in a little while.
Thanks, Father.
You take it easy, Mike.
A lousy place to die, prison. But I ain't got my choice, thanks to you.
Well, it's just that you picked to do a couple of things that the law and some insurance companies didn't agree with, Mike.
I don't hold none of that against you. The guy does what he does. I don't know how to tell you this.
Maybe I better get the doctor. You shouldn't be talking so much.
No, wait. Johnny, look, you know I'm no crybaby. When the doctor gave me the news, I got to thinking. I ain't scared to blow out, you understand?
I know, Mike, I know.
It's just that I had a wife once, a long time ago when I started out.
Oh?
Yeah, then I just kind of drifted out of her picture one day. Ain't got a cough drop, baby. Yeah, I guess it wouldn't cure what I got. Anyhow, I got to do something for her before I... Well, Johnny, I lay here and I get myself an idea.
Yeah, Mike?
Johnny, if there was some real easy money lying around, would you pick it up for me?
Depends on how clean it is, Mike, and where it's lying.
Sure. It's clean, all right. You can find that out for yourself.
All right.
Now, listen. Till they moved me down here in the infirmary, I roomed upstairs with Jojo Panny. You know him?
No, don't believe I do.
And car thief from the Hay States. He got his sabbatical 3 weeks ago. Paroled.
Uh-huh.
Well, I've been in the camp with a lot of guys, but Jojo Panny takes the cake. He's got a little old 5-year trick to put in. This Jojo, he does it like a vacation. You know, a real picnic. Every time he gets a chance out in the yard, he's taking sun. So he don't get the color, see?
Yeah.
When they push him in with me, I notice this. And I get to going over in my head. Yeah. Why does a guy whistle in a cell block, Johnny? Why is he treating it like a rest home?
Short term. He's got something outside waiting.
That's it, baby. He's got something waiting for him outside. Something that he knows will keep safe. Money.
Thought you said this was legitimate, Mike.
It is. Now, wait. I didn't ask Jojo anything about this. No, I figured it out myself. Then a couple of times I hear him yelling in his sleep. McCormick, he yells. McCormick. Huh? Make sense now, Johnny?
Not yet.
The big heist, Johnny, the big heist. A few years ago, a rich guy named McCormick out on Long Island or someplace like that gets turned over for $100,000 worth of jewelry. You remember?
Vaguely.
Well, I'm thinking that Jojo Panny was in on it somewhere. Else why would he be singing and whistling and chilling himself around this fly trap for 5 years? Else why would he be talking about that when he's sleeping? McCormick.
Yeah. Maybe you've got something, Mike.
I know I got something, Johnny. And you got something, too.
Now, Mike, take it easy.
Oh, I'm all right. Don't you see? The insurance company must have a reward out. They always do. A reward.
Yeah, but Mike, look.
I tell you, Jojo is the ginzo that done the job. Or he knows who did it. So, you look into it. Work on it. Maybe turn up the stuff and get the reward. Good clean coin.
Yeah.
Send half of it to my old lady, will you? You keep the rest yourself. What do you say? Huh? Will you?
Ego facultati mihi ad apostolia, sedi tributa indulgentiam plenaria.
Mike Kern died 3 hours later. The last living thing he did was wink at me. Expense account, item 2, $14.20. Train fare and incidentals, Ossining to New York. I arrived at 2:15, dropped my bag off at the New Western, and went over to the Metropolitan Police Station to find out what I could about the McCormick matter. It was all pretty much as old Mike had told me. A Julian McCormick, living on Long Island, had suffered a $100,000 jewelry burglary in 1951. 12 suspects had been arrested and released. The case was marked open and unsolved. Allied Casualty had been the insurance company involved.
This is the adjustment office. Frank Porter speaking.
My name's Johnny Dollar, Mr. Porter. I'm an investigator.
Oh, I think I've heard of you, Mr. Dollar. Yeah?
Wonder if you could give me a little information about a claim your company handled in 1951. A man named Julian McCormick out on Long Island.
Gee whiz. Long time ago. What about the McCormick claim?
I might have some information on it. I don't know yet. It's a long chance. I'm at police headquarters, and I notice you investigated for the insurance company. I'd like to talk to you.
Yeah, sure, but it's kind of late today. Tomorrow, okay?
Well, you can tell me this right now. Is there any reward being offered?
Gee whiz, kind of folds my sails.
How's that?
Well, asking about a reward. You sound like you can make full recovery and want to make sure that you'll be paid for it.
Well, I said it was just a long shot. How about the reward?
Well, that's pretty standard with us on cases like this. Yeah, I think it's $7,500, something like that. I'm not sure. Where are you staying?
New Weston.
Well, I'll look it up, get the exact figure, and call you there. How'll that be?
Fine, thanks. That'll be fine. Before I left the police station, I turned out a mug on Jojo Penny. He was a big, broad-shouldered lad with plenty of beef and a list of petty convictions, four of them in New York State. The last one was for carrying concealed weapons. His parole status was good, though, and the parole officer furnished me with his home address. The Allen Hotel, rates day, week, or month, 115th Street.
It's open, it's open. Come on in. Hiya.
Looking for Joe Penny.
Yes, sir. That's me.
My name's Johnny Dollar.
Yeah?
I just came down from Ossining. I saw a friend of yours up there, Joe.
Who was that?
Mike Cairn.
How's Mike?
Not so good. He died today.
It's too bad. He was a nice old coot. Kind of liked him.
Said if I ever saw you to say hello.
Uh-huh. He didn't give you my address.
No, I got it from the parole office.
You some kind of cop?
No, I work for an insurance company.
Oh.
Buy you a drink?
Sure. Why not?
Expense account, item three, $4 even for drinks. I wanted to look at Jojo Penny and talk to him and figure out how I was going to go about getting information from him. And the more I saw and the more he talked, the more I wondered if whatever he might have said about the McCormick case in his sleep happened to some other McCormick. After all, a man with a long list of petty thieveries is hardly ever involved in a slick, big-time safe-cracking job. That takes another kind of talent, and one I was sure that Jojo didn't have.
So I just been taking it easy and looking around. I figure I can get a job pushing a truck or maybe a cab if I'm lucky. Got to get something to do. Parole officers kind of hard-nosed about things like that.
Yeah. Drink up. Want one more?
Oh, no. No, thanks. Three's my limit. Like to keep in shape.
Sure. Say, you got anything to do?
Nothing special. Why?
Thought I might go out to Long Island later on tonight to say hello to an old friend of mine. If you haven't got anything to do, come on along.
You're okay, bub. Sure, why not? This friend of yours, he's an ex-con too?
No, he never did any time. Just a friend. Want to say hello is all.
Oh.
Rich fella. His name's Julian McCormick.
You're, very big with the hellos around here today, aren't you?
Anything wrong, Joe?
You probably are.
Why do you say that?
Nothing.
Ever know anyone named McCormick?
I knew a guy named Arnie McCormick once back in Salt Lake City. We were pals for a while.
Oh.
Yeah. Arnie was killed in the war. He'd got himself drafted in the infantry.
Maybe he's related to my friend Julian McCormick out on Long Island.
He wasn't related to anybody, not that bird. I'm leaving. I want to get up early tomorrow.
Why not come with me?
Thanks for the drinks.
He drifted off down the street and left me standing there. And one thing I was sure of, he had the name McCormick on his mind. Whether it was the right McCormick or the right case, I didn't know. Anyhow, he was my one big lead. So I was back at his hotel early the next morning and talking to the desk clerk.
Penny, did you say room 210?
Yeah, that's right.
Vamoose.
What?
He left bag and baggage last night.
Well, where did he go? What's his forwarding address?
He didn't say. Just left.
Now, here's our star, Bob Bailey, to tell you about tomorrow's episode.
Thanks. Tomorrow, there's living proof that a pretty girl can be just as dangerous as a pretty girl. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Okay, thank you, lads. I appreciate that. That was the McCormick matter. That had... It was originally aired on the 3rd of October, 1955. Again, this is the first... That was the first episode... It's actually episode 231 of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. But that was the first quarter hour daily, because you hear them say tomorrow, but no, it's not going to be tomorrow. It's going to be probably in about 28 minutes. I'm going to resume the McCormick matter. This is Arthur. You're listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Tufts Freeform Radio here in Medford. Coming up next, I'm going to play... This is a Gunsmoke. This one is titled Categorical Imperative. This had an original air date of the 20th of January, 1957. Starring William Conrad as Marshall Dillon. Ken, thanks for listening.
To you by L&M, the modern cigarette that lets you get full, exciting flavor through the modern miracle of the pure white miracle tip. Live modern. Smoke L&M. Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. And the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful. And a little lonely.
All right, Matt, you go ahead, then. Play that doggone double six. I know you got it.
Okay, Doc, that's how you want it. There it is.
Yeah, I know it. Fine way for a couple of grown-up men to spend their time playing dominoes.
That's better than fighting that storm outside, anyway.
Yeah, maybe you're right at that. I wouldn't go out in that weather tonight if a plague were raging.
Sure play, Doc.
Or a dozen babies were about to be born.
Sure play, Doc. Quit stalling, will you? Come on, lay one down.
Don't rush me. A man's got to think in this game, you know.
Well, not if he can count to 12, he doesn't.
The worst blizzard in years, man.
Yeah, it still hasn't hit its peak. Well, how's Kitty getting along, huh?
Well, her throat's been sore, but just a touch of the grip.
Oh.
I told her to stay in bed for another day or so.
Come on, play, will you, Doc? It's your play. It's your play, Doc. Doc?
Oh, I quit. That's the problem. I never do have any luck playing in my own office.
I thought you said this game was a matter of thinking.
That's the bad news.
Oh, Chester, close the door.
Pound the door.
Pull your horses, Doc.
Oh. I didn't figure you'd step a foot outside that jail for the next 2 days. What's the matter?
Johnny got away.
Got away? You mean Clay Macklin?
Yes, sir.
Well, what happened?
Well, sir, I was fixing some coffee, and he yelled out from his cell and asked could he have some, and when I took it to him...
He jumped you, huh?
Yes, sir, he jumped me, yeah. That's all. I wouldn't have been so careless with nobody else. But he ain't never tried to get away before.
He jumped you, though.
Jumped. I don't know why I tried it this time. You've got no case against him.
Clay Macklin's been rustling cattle for the last 2 years, Doc.
But you can't prove it, and you know it. Judge Bent will turn him loose the minute he's brought to trial.
Yeah, maybe, but he's going to stand trial anyway.
Well, what are you planning to do?
Go after him, of course.
In this weather?
It'll have to be in this weather, Doc. I don't know any way of changing it.
Saddle leathers get stiff and boards in weather like this. Whoa.
You figure he's been gone about 3 hours, huh, Justin?
Oh, pretty near that, Mr. Dillon. I'd have been locking that doggone cell too yet if Ben Elder hadn't seen Macklin riding out of town and finally got curious enough to come over to the jail.
Well, it took him long enough.
That's because he figured Macklin had been turned loose.
Whoa.
Everybody in town knows he will be sooner or later.
Maybe.
Marshal Dillon?
Sound like old Judge Bent.
Yeah. Over here, Judge.
Well, why don't you turn that blamed lantern up so a man can see his way around?
And I guess I've been saddling horses long enough not to need much light.
Even, Judge.
Matt, what's this duck tells me about you heading out on a wild goose chase?
I'm going to bring Clay Macklin back, that's all.
But why?
When a prisoner escapes, I go after him, Judge.
But what good would it do to go riding off blind into a storm like this and probably lose your life for nothing?
That's not that bad. Macklin was seen riding out of town southwest. The only thing in reach down that way is the Chick Paw Cattle Company. Mm. They got 2 line cabins toward the Cimarron, and Macklin used to work for the Chick Paw.
All right. And suppose you do find him holed up in one of those cabins. Suppose you are able to bring him back. You know I'm just going to have to turn him loose, don't you?
Well, that's your job, not mine, Judge.
Well, now, Matt, for the love of...
Look, I've had Macklin in jail for 2 weeks waiting trial, and every day I've had to listen to him brag how he'd get off scot-free, hear him sneer at the law, make a big joke out of it.
All right, Matt.
Tonight he's out to prove he doesn't even have to wait for the law to decide on his case. I don't like that, Judge. I happen to be a lawman. All right, Chester, if you're settled up, let's start riding.
Yourself of old-fashioned ideas.
Why don't you live modern? Live modern. Live modern.
Free up. Freshen up your taste.
Smoke an L&M.
Live modern. Smoke modern. Smoke L&M. Enjoy full, exciting flavor through L&M's Pure White Miracle Tip. L&M draws easier, tastes richer, smokes cleaner. That's why today more people are changing to L&M than to any other cigarette. So free up, freshen up your taste, live modern, change to L&M.
Make today your big red letter day and start to live the modern way. Live modern.
smoking L&M.
It's America's fastest growing cigarette.
I just don't think I can go on much longer without resting up a little.
That cabin's bound to be pretty close around here. You better keep moving.
Yeah, but he might not even be there when we find him.
He'll be there, all right.
He wasn't in the first one.
More reason he'll be at this one. No place else to shelter. Wait a minute.
What?
Off to the left there. The snow cleared for a second. I thought I saw it.
Well, I sure do hope so.
Well, let's head over that way, huh?
It'll be gone in another half hour.
Yeah, there it is. That's the cabin, all right. Come on.
You know what happened to that cabin?
Yeah, we got a lot colder before we got warmer. Only we haven't missed it.
You think Macklin's going to put up a fight?
No. I think he'll figure about the way Doc and Judge Bent did. Only a couple of crazy men would come after him in a storm like this.
You know, I kind of agree with him, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, you still came along, though, didn't you?
Yeah, but I ain't too sure why.
Here, let's leave the horses here and go up on foot.
All right, sir. Oh.
He's here, all right. There's a horse standing in the lean-to there.
My, a fire is sure going to feel mighty good, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, if he's got one. All right, I'll hit the door and go in fast, and you follow me in, huh?
Yes, sir.
All right. All right, hold it, Macklin. Don't try for it.
Well, the marshal.
Tie his hands, Chester.
Yes, sir. Turn around there, Macklin.
Well, you sure did catch me asleep. That's a fact.
Get your...
Probably saved having to kill you, Macklin.
Maybe. How's the weather out? You boys look kind of red-nosed. Been drinking, have you?
Ow. You're a real talky fella, ain't you?
I didn't figure you'd go to this much trouble just for nothing, Marshal.
I didn't think you would.
Hey, there's the makings for coffee over there, Mr. Dillon. Will it fix us some?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Better be careful, Chester. That's what got you into trouble last night. Making coffee.
Well, you don't never catch a fox the same way twice, Macklin. And one thing sure you ain't gonna get none this time.
I drank a potful before I went to sleep. I kind of had it on you boys. I got in ahead of the worst of the storm.
Yes, sir. Ought to be a slab of bacon around somewhere, maybe some flour. Why don't you rustle us up something to eat while you're at it, huh?
Yeah, well, there's flour here, all right. Bacon's probably one of them cans.
Speaking of rustling, Marshal...
Don't push your luck, Michael.
Oh, well, now, you're one of them high-minded lawmen. You wouldn't mistreat a helpless prisoner.
I'd regret it afterwards, if that's what you mean.
By golly, I bet you would, Dad.
I found the bacon, Mr. Jones.
Huh?
Yeah, 3-4 pound piece.
Well, don't cook all of it.
Well, maybe half.
There's three of us got to eat off that till the storm blows itself out. Maybe a week.
With any luck, Macklin, we'll be back in Dodge before midnight tonight.
What are you talking about?
I couldn't stand your company for a week. We're heading out as soon as we eat.
In this weather? Why, that's the craziest fool thing I ever heard.
Macklin.
What?
Why don't you shut up?
Yourself of old-fashioned ideas.
Why don't you live modern? Live modern. Live modern.
Free up. freshen up your taste.
Smoke an L&M.
Only the modern miracle of the pure white miracle tip can bring all of L&M's full, exciting flavor through to you. And that's the big reason why today more people are changing to L&M than to any other cigarette. Remember, L&M draws easier, tastes richer, smokes cleaner. So live modern. Change to L&M.
Make today your big red letter day and start to live the modern way. Live, live, live modern. Smoke at L&M.
It's America's fastest growing cigarette.
You're going to find tonight's in Dodge.
Lead him close to you, Chester. He'll follow if you're breaking trail for him. Macklin, stay with us. Stop trying to drift off like that.
I ain't trying nothing. If you'd untie my hands, maybe I could lead this fool horse straight.
You can lead him straight. Now get back over this way.
Breaking snow trail for a horse. I'll be on his back with him breaking trail.
He wasted an hour trying that. Now, easy now. Here's the edge of the ice.
Back on flat, it was the wind cutting its pieces, and down here in the river bottom where there's a little shelter, the snow is 4 foot deep.
Wait a minute, Chester. Let me test that ice. This freeze came out pretty fast, and there's still live water underneath.
Sounds pretty solid, Mr. John.
Yeah, it'll hold us, all right. Hey, Macklin, come back here. How many times do I have to tell you to stay close?
Simmer down, Marshal. I've crossed as much ice in my time as you have.
Hey, he broke through.
Let go of the reins, Macklin. If that horse goes in with you, he'll kick you to death.
Let go!
Chester, mount up. Then help me one end of your lariat.
What are you going to do?
I'm going in after him.
No, now, you go into that water, you'll freeze to death.
His hands are tied, Chester.
My goodness, here. Marshal, help me.
Come here.
Help me.
Easy now.
Yeah.
Now, if we're not out of here in 30 seconds, we won't come out at all. Now, come on.
Mr. Dillon, hurry.
Steady, Macklin. I got hold of you.
I've got a
turn
around the saddle horn. I can pull you out right now.
All right, Chester. Kick up your horse, but easier. You'll pull my arms off. All right, steady, Macklin.
Hang on, Mr. Dillon. Come on.
All right, a little more, Chester. Easy. All right, that's it. All right, Chester. Let's get a fire going, huh? And a big one. Fast.
By genius, if it was left to my choosing, I'd sit right here with this fire till that doggone storm blows itself out.
You get pretty hungry in a couple of days, Chester.
I'm pretty hungry right now.
Well, I never saw the time when you weren't.
How are you feeling, Mr. Dillon?
Well, I've seen better days. How are you making out, Michael?
I ain't never gonna take another bath as long as I live.
Well, you're lucky to be alive.
Sure. Who ain't?
We better get ready to push on. We're only about a half hour out of Dodge. Won't be so bad.
You know, I just can't figure you, Marshal.
No?
I've knowed lawmen before. Crooked, most of them. But I ain't ever knowed one like you.
Is that so?
Well, take this thing of coming after me in a storm like this. You didn't have to do that. Did you?
Depends on how you look at it, I guess.
What do you mean?
I got a job to do, Macklin. Try to do it right. Besides, I guess I got a kind of respect for the law.
Well, what's that got to do with it?
Well, I'd say the law's a set of rules to make things run smoother. Written out so everybody knows what they are and what the penalties are. And the rules hold for a lawman the same as for anybody else. Maybe even more so.
What rules are you talking about?
Well, when a prisoner escapes, it's your job to go after him. Bring him back. That's one of them.
Even when they're going to turn me loose and everybody knows it?
That's up to the court. It's got nothing to do with me.
It just don't make sense.
Not to you, maybe.
I reckon you'll try to tell me there's some rule about you jumping into that water and dragging me out.
When a prisoner in custody is not able to look out for himself, it's up to the lawman to take care of him.
Well, I wouldn't have jumped in after you. I'd have cut out and run for it.
Yeah, I guess you would.
I ain't too sure that's why you've done it, Marshal. Just because of some rule.
Well, you figure it your way.
Anyway, I'm much obliged for you hauling me out of there. Sure thought I was done for.
Come on, let's get started. I got a jail cell waiting for you.
Judge Ben's finally made up his mind, Mr. Dillon.
You don't show much respect for the court, Chester.
Yeah, there he goes,
old. Well, as you all know, I ain't one of them judges that deals in a lot of legal jabber. So I'll just say it out plain. Clay Macklin, stand up and face the court. Now, I've puzzled this evidence over every which way, Macklin. And I tried to find some way to give you your just desserts. And me and every man in this courtroom knows you've been rustling cattle.
Now, Judge, that ain't no way to talk.
Get up. Like I said, you're nothing but a cow thief. But by golly, there just ain't enough evidence to stick you on it. Wouldn't do no good if I tried because some book judge up in Topeka had reversed me on it just as sure as shooting. Yeah, I'm sorry, Marshal Dillon. I know you went to a heap of trouble.
That's all right, Judge.
Well, all I can do is throw the case out. Dismiss.
Well, it's a crying shame, that's what it is.
Judge Bent did the only thing he could, Chester. It was just an outside chance, anyway.
But everybody in town knows Macklin's guilty.
A man's innocent until he's proved guilty in a court of law, Chester, so Macklin's innocent.
Marshal Dillon?
Yeah, what is it, Macklin?
The judge let me off, all right.
Yeah.
But there's something I want to say.
You can pick up your stuff at the jail whenever you want.
No, that ain't it, Marshal. Something. Well, I reckon you wouldn't believe me if I was to tell you.
Tell me what?
Well, you kind of give me some things to think about, Marshal.
What?
Saving my life the way you done. Them rules. All that.
So?
I don't know for sure, but, well, maybe I won't be doing any more rustling, Marshal. Not that I ever did, mind you.
Oh, I see it.
I just want to say thank you. Guess I'll be leaving now. Bye.
Well, I declare. Well, I never. I guess this Macklin ain't all bad after all.
No man is, Chester.
No, sir.
Tell you what, just to prove it to you, I'm going to buy you a drink.
You are? Rye with a little sugar in it?
Why not? Come on.
Moment, our star, William Conrad, America's Protestants, Catholics, and Jews are strengthening the bonds of brotherhood and friendship by helping the needy overseas. Through their houses of worship, these three faiths are sending voluntary relief to virtually every free country in the world. Hundreds of millions of pounds of goods, clothing, and medicine will go to victims of war, disaster, and famine in many parts of the world. More than 80% of American voluntary relief work for the hungry and needy overseas is conducted through the religious agencies of these three major faith groups. When you share with needy persons overseas through your house of worship, you are promoting the spirit of democracy that unites all peoples for peace and goodwill. You are keeping faith with the finest tradition and heritage of America. CBS Radio urges you to keep faith with those in need overseas by giving as much as you can through your faith. And now, William Conrad.
The makers of L&M wish to remind you that you can help Hungarian emergency relief by sending your contribution to the American Red Cross, CARE, or your church or synagogue.
Gunsmoke. Produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. The story was specially written for Gunsmoke by Les Crutchfield, with editorial supervision by John Meston. The music was composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterns by Tom Hanley and Bill James. Featured in the cast were John Daner and Ben Wright. Harley Bear is Chester and Howard McNear is Doc. Join us again next week for another story on Gunsmoke.
Daner. Just can't get away from that gentleman here on the Grand Hour. He's been featured in Frontier Gentlemen, Have Gun Will Travel. He did the audition program for Fort Laramie. He's here, there, and everywhere. That was Categorical Imperative, an original air date of the 20th of January, 1957. I was kind of curious to know what was going on in Hungary in 1957, considering they won a plea for Hungarian relief. I don't know. This is Arthur. You're listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Now I have to fulfill an FCC obligation.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry. That you can hear is the microphone. It sounds like horse hoof beats. To conclude the show today, I'm going to play episode 232 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, The McCormick Matter. This, again, The McCormick Matter, again, was the first... How many times do I got to say again? The first quarter-hour daily that Johnny Dollar did, starring Bob Bailey. This one's original air date was the 4th of October, 1955. Thanks for listening.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as...
Johnny Dollar.
This is Frank Porter, Allied Casualties.
Yes, Mr. Porter.
Oh, call me Frank, Johnny. You phoned yesterday about the McCormick matter. I got all the stuff about the case on my desk here. We're still offering $7,500 reward.
Thanks for confirming it, Frank.
Sure. You got a tip or something?
An old con named Mike Cairn gave me a tip about a guy named Jojo Panny. I'm working on it.
Need any help?
No, not yet. I might. Jojo pulled out of his hotel last night, bag and baggage.
What are you going to do?
I'm on my way to Long Island.
Huh?
I want to talk to McCormick himself.
Oh. Johnny.
Yeah?
Let me give you a tip for your own good. Don't bother Julian McCormick unless you've really got something. Could be dangerous.
I think I've got something.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Allied Casualty and Insurance Company Limited, Markham Building, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the McCormick matter. Item 4, $10 deposit on the car I rented to drive out to Julian McCormick's home on Long Island. And judging by the looks of the place, a safe full of $100,000 worth of jewelry would feel right at home. It was a mansion, and the rugs on the floor were an inch thick.
I'm sorry I've kept you waiting. Mrs. McCormick and I were packing for a little trip to Europe. Sit down, please.
Thanks. Going to be gone long?
Oh, we usually spend several months a year over there. We're a bit late this year. Our reservations are for next week.
I envy you, Mr. McCormick.
Dollar, the name?
That's right.
Forgive me, but I don't seem to recall having heard of you before.
Oh, that's okay. We never met. I'm an insurance investigator.
Oh. Really? Am I being investigated or something?
No, nothing like that. It's just that I might have a lead on that jewelry that was taken from your home a few years ago.
Well, that's wonderful. You must tell me about it. Can I make you a drink?
No, thanks.
You're from the insurance company, Allied Casualty?
No, I'm not. I'm an independent investigator.
Well, why should anyone feel it necessary to call in a... Oh, I see. There's a reward, of course.
That's right.
Yes, of course. But now, tell me, how can I help you?
Well, I'm just checking a few things, Mr. McCormick. I haven't even gone over it with the man who handled the case for Allied. Possibly I have run into something that'll help. I don't know. I'd like you to tell me what happened.
My safe was opened and my jewelry taken.
I mean, how it happened.
Well, it was right in this very room. That's the wall safe there.
Uh-huh.
Mrs. McCormick and I had just returned from our honeymoon. 5 years ago it was.
Yeah?
All I know is that when I stepped into the library here that morning, the safe was open and everything was gone. Whoever did it was extremely clever and quiet, I must say.
Was the safe cracked?
No. It was just opened. Someone figured the combination or something like that.
Well, who knew the combination at the time?
Only myself, Mr. Dollar.
You're sure of that?
Why, of course.
I see.
I reported it to the police right away here on Long Island. Then some men from New York City were here, too.
And your insurance company?
I reported it to my insurance company immediately. They had a man on the scene as soon as the police. Mr. Porter.
Frank Porter?
Yes. Do you know him?
I've talked to him on the phone. I haven't met him.
A very nice chap. He worked very hard trying to recover it.
I'm sure he did. Did they have an adjuster?
Yes.
How much did you collect, if you don't mind?
Not much.
What do you mean?
Well, it was unfortunate. By keeping that much jewelry in a small house safe, it seems I violated the clause in the contract. It should have been kept in a safety deposit box or some such. Consequently, the matter went into litigation. I'm afraid the court found me at fault. I collected only a part of the insured value, $20,000. So, you can see, I'd certainly welcome a recovery.
Sure.
The jewelry was in the family a good many years. I had given it to my wife, and I... Well, a man hates to lose things he loves.
Yes, I understand. Was Mrs. McCormick here the morning it happened?
Oh, yeah?
I'd like to talk to her.
She's terribly busy, but if you think it's sufficiently important, I'll call her.
No, never mind.
I'm curious, Mr. Dollar. This case has been closed a long time. At least, no one's contacted me or asked me for any information about it for at least 4 years. What opened it?
A man named Mike Cairn.
Huh? Who's he?
An old convict up at Ossining who shared a cell for a while with a man named Joe Panny.
Uh-huh.
Cairn died yesterday, but before he died, he told me he thought Panny had something to do with it. He'd heard him mention your name.
Well, it seems to me you should talk with this Joe Panny.
I did, and I will some more, as soon as I locate him again. Right now, he's missing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, thanks for the time, Mr. McCormick.
You let me know if you learn anything?
Sure.
Do you honestly think you can recover that jewelry?
With any luck at all.
That would be wonderful, wonderful.
You think so?
Why, yes, of course.
Mrs. McCormick might be glad to know about it, too.
What?
You said it was her jewelry. I don't know why I said that to him. Just a sudden impulse. But he wasn't smiling when he walked me to the door, shook my hand, and patted me on the shoulder. I had a funny feeling that Mr. Julian McCormick was scared like a rabbit of me. I drove back to the city, had lunch at Walgreens, and dropped into Allied Casualties, New York office, to pick up the folder on reward information. I met Frank Porter and liked him right away, a big red-headed man in a tweed suit.
Well, gee whiz, Johnny, it makes me feel older than ever doing this.
How come?
Well, I weighed 15 pounds less when this case started, June 1951. Ah, here we are. These are pictures of the stuff.
Uh-huh.
Now, that one they call Tierra del Fuego. Huh? Some necklace, hmm?
I can see why.
Yeah, and this one was called Imperial, in the royal family of Russia at one time. And this is the other one, Placid.
Beautiful stuff.
Oh, you can say that again.
That all of it?
Well, that's about the size of it, Johnny. $100,000 gone.
Yeah.
Help any?
Sure. It's nice to know what I'm trying to find.
Well, I hope you have better luck than I did.
Yeah. Say, who was the police officer on the case?
Martin. Dules Martin.
Out of Central?
Yeah. We ran down every lead we could find, big and small.
The file said you made 12 arrests.
Yeah, something like that, but not one of them panned out. Had to let them all go. Martin requested pickups on every big-time jewelry man in the country. Now, I don't think one of them was overlooked.
Well...
No, Johnny, somebody just simply walked in that house, opened the safe as neat as you please, and walked right out with all of this. Very slick job. Had to be an experienced man.
Well, might have been a first job for someone just starting in. He got lucky.
Yeah, we thought of that, and we didn't think much of it after a while.
Frank,
gee whiz, Johnny, you know, nobody could be that lucky. Case the house, know exactly where the safe was, know what was in it, get in, open it up, and get out without anybody, servants, the McCormicks, or any of their friends even seeing.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Well, that wasn't even the hardest part, you see. Not one scrap of this stuff has ever turned up anywhere.
Yeah, well,
anywhere. Now, what did whoever took it do with it? Did he break it down, sell it overseas? What? Not a trace of it. Imagine that.
Imagine.
You know what I think? I think the guy who swiped all this stuff still has it. I think he's sitting around waiting for it to cool off.
Could be, yeah.
But it's never going to cool off, Johnny. There isn't a city in this country or across the ocean that isn't on the lookout for these pieces.
I suppose.
Now, sooner or later, hot boy or lucky boy, well, whoever he is, will make a move. Meantime, we just wait. Unless, of course, you've got something for us to look into.
Not yet, Frank.
Yeah, well, when you have, we'll be right with you all the way.
Good, good.
How about a drink?
Take a rain check.
Okay, but remember, we got a whole floor full of lawyers upstairs. They can get up warrants, writs, seizure orders, anything you might want.
Yeah.
You just let me know when you get somewhere and we'll go to work.
I'll do that, Frank. I left Frank Porter and went back over to the parole office to see what had developed with Joe Panny. After all, if he didn't report in, he'd be in violation of his parole, be in real trouble. But nothing had developed. He hadn't put in a change of address, nothing. So I went back to my hotel and had some dinner. Then I shaved, changed my clothes. Expense account, item 5, $1.50 cab fare. I garaged my rented car, went back to Central Police Station and pulled out the mug on Joe Panny once more, hoping to get a line on some friends or relatives of his where he might be staying. Up till then, things had been going pretty routine. Then a clerk from the parole offices stepped across the hall.
Hi, Mr. Dollar.
Hi.
Thought it was you I saw in here. I wasn't sure. How's it going?
Fine, fine.
Talk to your friend Jojo Panny yet?
Not today. Why?
Well, you seemed awful anxious to talk to him, is all.
I am.
Why don't you go see him?
You playing games? I've been trying to find out where he is all day.
And I already told you.
You what?
Sure, I gave it to you half an hour ago when you phoned.
When who phoned?
Sure, about half an hour ago. Look, Joe Panny called in and told me his address.
Yeah?
I no sooner set down a phone and you call in and said, this is Johnny Dollar. Have you heard from Joe Panny?
What?
I said, yeah, and I told you his address, that's all.
What address did you say?
The Allen Hotel on 115th Street, same place he was before. What's the matter, you forget?
It took me 10 minutes to get from the police station over to the Allen Hotel. 10 minutes of wondering who'd put in that call and used my name. I went up the stairs, two at a time, up to the second floor. And right at the top of the landing, I bumped into a dark-haired woman wearing a silver fur piece.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see you.
It's all right. You hurt?
No, not at all. Please, let me go past. I'm in a hurry.
Yeah, I'd be in a hurry, too.
What do you mean?
The gun.
What?
You should carry it on the inside of your purse.
Oh, I didn't...
Suppose I take it.
No, let go of me.
Fingernails, huh? Give it to me.
All right, take it.
She'd given it to me, all right, right on the side of the head. It didn't knock me out, but it did knock me off balance, so I tangled up with a hall table. And that gave her plenty of time to scurry down the stairs while I got out of the furniture and back on my feet. By the time I got down the stairs and out on the street, she was nowhere in sight. No one yelled, I'm shot. No one did anything but what they were already doing. Where were you just now? You weren't here at the front desk.
I was out back eating my dinner. Why?
Nothing. You happen to see that woman who just ran through here?
No.
Tall, dark-haired woman, about 30, wore a mink stole.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, you're kidding. And this joint.
Oh, brother.
You still looking for Joe Panny?
He lives here again, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Have you seen him? Where is he?
Out.
I sat down with myself and waited. A half an hour later, when the clerk went back to finish his dinner, I stepped over to the desk and borrowed his pass key and went back up the stairs to room 210. Well, I didn't need the pass key and I didn't need to doubt the clerk. Joe Panny wasn't there. But all of his things were. The curtains were drawn and the windows closed. Every drawer had been pulled out of every dresser. The mattress on the bed was slipped from top to bottom, and the rug had been ripped and turned over. Expense account, item 6, $1, one drink. For me. I left JoJo's room, went to the nearest bar, sat down, and had a drink. A scared victim, a missing con, a dark-haired woman wearing a mink and a gun. And other things. Right then and there, I decided that Mike Cann's tip had been pretty good at that.
Now, here's our star, Bob Bailey, to tell you about tomorrow's episode.
Thanks. Tomorrow, a slight case of mayhem. When the right guy turns up in the wrong place. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Thanks, Roy, for that segue. That was the McCormick matter. Original air date on that was the 4th of October, 1955. Again, as you hear, starring Bob Bailey as yours truly, Johnny Dollar. You got a kick out of that one. I guess he went to lunch at Walgreens, 1955. I wonder if that was a reference to what we know as Walgreens here in 2019. Anyway, thanks for listening. It's been Arthur here, the Grand Hour, 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Medford at Tufts Freeform Radio. At some point, the new DJs are training, so I anticipate somebody will be on after the grand hour here in a couple of weeks. I don't know when the new schedule is going to be done. As soon as all the DJs get trained. Nobody signed up